Today's program is brought to you by White Oak Pastures, a five-generation Georgia-based beef and poultry farm determined to conduct business in an honorable manner. For more information, visit whiteoakpastures.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, America, I'm Chad Pagano. I'm a former Army sniper, a chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education, and an avid lifelong hunter, and you're listening to The Wild Game Domain, From the Hunt to the Hearth, airing live on heritageradionetwork.org. If you've been tuning in the last 2 weeks, I apologize. It's been rough. I had a little fender bender, and then had to call into work and do some stuff there. So, but I'm back, and I'm very excited about today's show because, kids, if you're listening, turn off the radio right now. Do not listen any further. We're going to talk about sex. Yeah, S-E-X. That's right. That's what we're going to talk about. We're going to get dirty today. Talk about sex. It's going to be an R-rated show. We're probably always a little R-rated. We might be X-rated today, so be careful. So normally you hear the term rut. You know, your buddy tells you, hey, I'm in a rut. Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. What's going on? Problems with girls, work? What's, you know, it's a bad thing. It's a negative thing. To us outdoorsmen, to us hunters, when I hear the word rut, my ears perk up. You know, I sit up straight. I want to hear, did that guy just say rut? Something's going on with the rut? So it's a magical time for the hunter. It's when we have hope for the deer, for our harvest to actually down an animal and harvest a white-tailed deer. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. I want to really talk about understanding the rut. You know, as a layman, I guess we'll call it, as just a person interested in wildlife, maybe you're a wildlife photographer. You should know about the whitetail's rut because that's when you're most likely to see them in general. As a hunter, you probably already know you want to understand the rut. You want to understand, you know, every behavior of the animal you're hunting, obviously. But specifically for the white-tailed deer, the rut. So, you know, what is the rut? It's simply the mating season of animals such as deer, sheep, elk, moose, the caribou. Camels go into rut. Goats. What else are there? Antelopes. Did I say antelopes? Antelopes go into rut. And this is their mating season. And this really, this depending on how you look at it and how you want to look at it, we're not scientists. I'm not a scientist, you know. As a hunter, you know, it's a very short window that I care about. You know, it's maybe a two-week period where we're actually looking at the rut and seeing more activity through this rut while we're hunting. It's why we hunt in November. It's why the Department of Environmental Control sets the hunting dates for November. Notice, you know, we start in October, right? In New York, we start October 1st, and it's archery. Archery hunters need the deer to come closer. We tend to pattern deer more often. Archery hunters, and I'm a rifle hunter, so don't send me an email. You're an elitist archery hunter talking down. I'm a rifle hunter also. If you want to just go out there and lean against a tree and shoot a deer when he runs by, I get it. That's cool as long as you eat it. But truthfully, archery hunters put more into their hunts. They spend weeks, months scouting, patterning the deer, figuring out exactly where they're going to be because they're hunting outside of the rut. What the DC tries to do is set the rifle season during the rut. So it tends to be right now. The rifle season generally starts on the 15th up here, November 15th. And depending on the year, you know, you might miss the rut by a few days. You might catch it. It might be just starting. But that's why they know that's when the deer is most active. And they want the most hunters, which are the rifle hunters, in the woods taking down deer to control the herds. You know, so if you've ever sat in the woods in November, which, you know, outside of hunters and maybe, you know, some real outdoorsmen, why would you? But, you know, that is when the woods are just alive with action, movement, you know, everything. And it all develops off of the deer activity that happens. And so I want to break that down today. I want to kind of go through it and make sure we understand what we call all the phases of the rut, the actual deer rut. So, you know, because when I began hunting, you know, I'm 45 years old, 44 years old. When I started hunting, I didn't even get it, you know. I started rifle hunting. My father dragged me out to the woods. And, you know, so I started realizing, I just kind of looked at it and said, wow, these 2 weeks where I'm out hunting, you know, not for the full 2 weeks, but, you know, I'd hunt 6 days in that 2 week period there in November. I realized it was this crazy period of time when the whitetails, for some reason, just started running around. And, you know, a lot of people think it has to do with the simple fact that there's a lot of hunters in the woods. As you put more hunters and pressure on these deer, they're going to move more. And really, the opposite couldn't be more true. You put more people in the wood, the deer lay low. They tend to want to bed down, get into a safe, thick wooded area and just hang out. So this 2 week period is when the deer are really out looking to complete the life cycle, to keep the herd alive. They're a beautifully resilient animal, and it's basically this 2 week period that keeps the herd strong. So, you know, but after now, I've been hunting, I don't know, 20 something years. I get it. I get the chemistry. I realize there's a science to it. I've read up on it. I've researched it. So, and truthfully, it's only made it more confusing for me, because what you think you're seeing out in the woods, I was telling the producer today, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I was sitting in my tree stand and a doe ran under my tree stand. Broke from the wood line. I hunt in this little bit of a clearing and ran right under my tree stand, and she was jumpy. She was looking behind. Her tail was flickering, and I said, rut, here it is, right now, it's going on. And she kind of just snuck off behind my tree stand, and from the same direction, not a minute later, here comes this little button buck doe, probably a year and a half years old, running out, and he's grunting, and he's snorting, and he's going crazy. And I started grunting at him, and it was a lot of fun, and I thought, well, here we go. He's smelling estrus, which we'll get to in a minute. He's smelling that it's the rut, that it's time, that this doe is ready to breed. And, you know, we argue, scientists argue if button bucks actually reproduce, if they're ready yet. It doesn't matter. They mimic behavior from older bucks. They try to do the same things the big boys are doing. So he was on top of this buck, and I thought, here we go, it's the rut. I ran back to our clubhouse. I was talking, and 10 other guys came in out of the woods that night. And we're on a 1,200-acre property, and not one other hunter even saw a deer. They said, what? Rut? No, there's no rut activity. I haven't seen anything. I haven't seen any scrapes. So you never really know, and you got to kind of break down and understand the actual phases of the rut. Now, there's a lot of theories out there. There's a couple of different scientists that have a couple of different theories, and truthfully, I you know, again, I'm a dumb guy. I don't know. I'm just a hunter, so I kind of morph all of them together and take a little bit of all of the theories, and not caring, I sit in the woods a lot in November. That's what I try to do, so I don't miss it. And to me, that's the only fail-safe way. You got to hunt at least 3 days a week starting and beginning in November to start seeing either the tail end, beginning, you know, to catch a part of the actual rut. So there's something, I was pronouncing this word over and over. It's not a very hard word, but for me, for some reason, photoperiodism, that's an important word. And that's the deer's behavioral responses to changes in the amount of daylight. Right, daylight savings, shorter days, and this basically drives really nature's timeline, not just the deer's timeline, all of nature, right? From, I don't know, the leaves on the tree to down to the antler, you know, the antlers growing on a deer. So through the summer's growing season, it's a good time for the whitetail, man. They love it. It's the summer. Everything's looking good. Outside of the bugs driving them crazy, they're living life, man. They're eating plenty of food. Everything's good. And then all of a sudden, all of these changes start to happen. The days start shortening towards the end of the summer. And the changes really start to happen within the male deer pod, the buck population. And that's when they start sensing something's going on here every year. And this is when I got to start setting up, I don't know what you want to call it, a pecking order, right? The pecking order of their herd. And so the bigger, more mature, dominant bucks, that's when they start saying, all right, I'm going to start showing the other bucks around here who's the boss because, days are getting shorter, food's dwindling, and I know once that starts happening, it's time to get busy with the ladies too. So I got to set my boundaries where I am the king of the castle. And so what you start seeing at the end of the summer and early fall is you know, these stare downs. You start to see deer, you know, kind of making these fake runs at each other. You'll see a bunch of deer in the field. I've seen this a million times on my hunting property sitting out. They all come out into the field, and it's great, you know, and you'll see a, I wouldn't call it a dominant buck, maybe a young six-pointer out there with a bunch of does, and all of a sudden you'll see a four-corn or a spike-horn walk out in the field, and instantly that six-pointer takes four or five aggressive steps right towards that smaller deer, and you'll hear him grunt. He'll actually go back to my show about the deer calls. You know, he does this loud, aggressive grunt. He'll stamp his hooves. You know, he doesn't want to get into a full-blown out fight yet, but he's saying, hey, I'm here. This is my territory. Just behave yourself. And this is when we start determining which buck is going to become the bull. Who's the bull of this herd here? Who controls this area? Eventually, what would happen? That spike horn would leave the area. When it gets into full blown, he knows I'm in trouble in this area. I'm probably not getting a doe in this area. He's running off. And these bucks, these younger bucks, will travel large areas to find a more cohesive place to breed in. But so this is the beginning of it. You start to see it. And basically what happens based on, you know, either the length of the day, the temperature in the air, the moon, depending on what scientist, these testosterone levels in these male deer start to rise. And it's slow, and it goes slow. Every day it goes up a little bit, goes up until, you know, the end of September. And that's when that valve in the deer opens up, and that testosterone is just pumping through. And they start doing their scrapes. They start rubbing their antlers on smaller saplings, and they start, you know, rubs and scrapes, you know, tearing up the ground. And so by mid-October, you know, the coolness in the air, the testosterone levels are ridiculous. And now the bucks are starting to move more during the day, and we're starting to see more activity. At this point, the estrogen levels in the does starts to climb. And it doesn't happen overnight. I think a lot of hunters believe, hey, this just happens overnight. You know, these estrogen levels shoot up and now they're ready to go. And it's not really what happens. The does slowly start to get into estrogen, and now they're starting to become ready for peak breeding, in which generally happens, you know, early November, something like that. And that's when most hunters call, that's the time we call the rut, when we say the rut. So, you know, there's all these confusing terms that come along with it. And we're going to go through each one of these terms, and we'll break them down and kind of, you know, the pre-rut, the rut, the post-rut, and make sure and kind of try to timeline it a little bit. So you could kind of analyze what you're seeing in the woods as you're sitting out there taking pictures of deer or trying to kill them. I don't care. Or just taking a hike and you see a deer. Just having a basic understanding of the phases of the rut will make your trip out into the woods a little more interesting. So let's take a short break, and we're going to come right back with the Wild Game Domain on heritageradionetwork.org.
So
White Oak Pastures is the only farm in the United States that has its own USDA-inspected red meat abattoir or slaughterhouse and its own USDA-inspected poultry abattoir or slaughterhouse. We partner with Whole Foods to deliver our high-quality meat and poultry from Miami, Florida, all the way to Princeton, New Jersey. One family, one farm, five generations, 145 years. A full circle return to sustainable land stewardship and humane animal stockmanship. For more information, please visit our website, whiteoakpastures.com.
Hey, welcome back. You're listening to the Wild Game Domain on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Chad Pagano, and we are talking about the rut. All right, so confusing terms, you know. And it's funny, I talk to a lot of hunters, and I used to, you know, really talk to people. I used to be less anti, so I know I have a show on the radio, and I should be very social, but I'm really not. I used to talk to people and question them, and so when a hunter would say to me, pre-rut, rut, post-rut, I would ask them, well, what do you mean by that? Or can you define that for me? What are you talking about? So I would understand. And now I just kind of listen, and I kind of say, oh, that's what they're referring to as a pre-rut. To me, that's not really a pre-rut. And so, you know, you got to take these terms with a grain of salt, unless you're a scientist, you know, who actually breaks them down. You know, these terms have been around for I don't know, at least 50 years, you know. The scientists have been using these terms for you know, the biologists, the researchers, you know, and one of these terms we use a lot is pre-rut. Pre, before, usually defines the behavior that occurs before we have full-blown breeding. So, you know, that's fact. That's how the biologists, the smart guys, it's what occurs before full-blown breeding. Most hunters think the pre-rut is, you know, early autumn period when the days are warm and there's a little rubbing and scraping going on, or you start to see just the beginning of the aggressive behavior. But, you know, depending on who you're speaking to, it could mean different things. You know, the word rut is the actual breeding period, the successful breeding period when they're getting dirty. Now it's time. It's actually happening. But to the hunter, the rut is really the whole period. You know, this is a very small window where the actual act is happening to a biologist, the rut. To us, it's, you know, when the bucks are going bonkers, when they're losing it, they're doing their rubbing, scraping, chasing, and now full-blown fighting. Instead of backing off, that six-pointer is attacking and trying to kill that spike horn. This is the full-blown rut for us. The post-rut, we kind of agree, you know, everyone kind of gets it. It's over, you know, it's over. The fun is over. Now it's time to start looking for where the deer are eating or where they're trying to re-energize after this really hard season. You know, within that, though, there's a lot of, I don't know what you want to call them, micro phases that occur. And as a hunter, if you understand these little micro phases, it really helps you break down pre-rut, rut, post-rut. There's a phase called the dominance phase. And, you know, among the white-tailed deer, it's somewhat progressive and it's ever-changing. The bucks come into velvet and the velvet eventually begins to peel. And this is really the beginning of their training period. And it's really the training. They're like gladiators. They're training for the greatest game, man, and it's breeding to complete their life cycle so the herd could live on. This period, you know, think of it if you're a sports fan as the preseason. It's when the football teams get together in preseason. You know, generally, you start seeing the advancement of this in early October, you know, October 1st when hunting starts. The antlers are just getting hard. Bucks begin to rub more. They tend to take advantage of the daylight. You know, like a boxer, the buck is rubbing a tree, strengthening its neck muscles, its shoulder muscles, you know, getting ready for the big upcoming fights. And depending on these, you know, these rubs that you find out in the woods, you'll see the bark pulled off of a larger tree. You know that's a bigger buck. Smaller, tinier saplings, you know that was a smaller buck. But these are, you know, visual markers to the hunter that, you know, it's starting to begin. We're in the dominance phase now. There is also thought from the biologist that the buck is leaving scent from various glands on his eyes, on his nose, on the trees, and on the ground to warn other bucks that, hey, this is my area. And then, you know, kick back to that testosterone, along with that testosterone starting to rise, and we're getting into it. And at this point, we go, you know, to a hunter, we're in the rut. Now it's starting. So it's time to get out in the woods, and we start to look for these signs. We start to look for the deer. And there's now, we're looking for what we would call physical competition. You know, the preseason is done. It's time to get to the game. I'm not talking about seeing a deer. I've seen two bucks actually fight. I'm not talking about it, but I'm looking for the signs of that. You know, the aggressive buck. You know, the sparring that's going to take place. I'm looking for the earth to be torn up. I'm looking for the damage done by these deer at this point. And, you know, this is when the deer really, the bucks especially, start moving. And because of that, the does are going to start to move. But, you know, a buck's range, you know, prior to the rut, you know, 600 acres he'll live on. You know, that's it. He won't go further than that. He staked his claim to his 600 acres, and he's got his food, he's got his water, he's got cover, he's got everything he needs on those 600 acres. Six football fields. Doesn't have to go bigger than that. But during the rut now, testosterone, he'll expand that up to 4,000, 5,000 acres. He'll start to cover more ground, staking claim to it and looking for the does. You know, and setting up that pecking order that we talked about earlier. And then here we go. You ready? This is for me, not the biologist, but for me, the rut. It's called the seeking phase. And this is when the bucks are more vocal. This is when we hear them grunting. You hear them snort, wheezing. You hear them being very aggressive. The bucks are communicating with other deers. Bleats, grunts, snorts, snort wheezes. I should have brought my caller in today. I'm not going to embarrass myself without that, but the snort wheeze is awesome. You know, and now they're maxed out. Maximum levels, testosterone, they're going crazy. The bucks are looking for that estrus doe. And as we know, deer, you know, they stay alive with their nose. They have the incredible ability to smell danger. And they also have the incredible ability to smell love. So they're looking for that estrus. The estrus, the chemical saying the doe is ready to breed. It's found in the urine. The deer pees, the doe pees in the woods. The bucks are looking for that. At this time, no doe is safe. None. They're not safe. They are running. They're trying to get away. They're playing coy with the bucks. And the buck, like we said, on this expanded territory is now just searching out these does, trying to lock down every single doe he could find and lay claim to that doe. This is the time most deer kills are going to happen. This is when you're going to harvest your deer. This is when that big mature buck, right? Not thinking straight. Think of testosterone in the deer as like bourbon in humans. This is when they're not thinking right. They're at the bar, right? All right, so you got the bar and bourbon and some guy with a bunch of testosterone in him. That's when he gets in trouble. That's when he tends to get in a little fight. Something happens, right? This is that time for the bucks. They get in trouble. They start running around. You know what? I don't care if it's 12 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm going for a walk, and I'm walking down this path because it's easy to walk down, and that's where my tree stand is. So this is when the big deer kind of slip up a little bit and, you know, start to make a little more mistakes. You know, getting back to it, you know, again, this is just a spectacular time for a hunter or for anybody to be in the woods. A very exciting time. You know, these aggressive bucks, you know, like the one fight I saw, it was a mature buck and an aggressive, I would call it a yearling, you know, buck. and they went at it. And eventually the more mature buck won off, and he fought off this deer. But it was violent, and it was kind of disturbing to watch in some ways. I thought it would be a little more interesting. They were trying to kill each other. They wanted to kill each other. They were trying to break each other's necks. They were trying to inflict damage. The younger buck realized, I don't have the antlers to compete here in this battle. So he kept, you know, kind of rearing up and throwing his hooves, and I mean striking the head of this mature buck. It was a pretty spectacular thing to watch. And you know, the thing I get from a couple of my knucklehead acquaintances, why didn't you shoot him? You should have shot him. No, I couldn't. I was mesmerized. It's hard to explain. I was watching this National Geographic episode in real time. It was really amazing. So you got the seeking phase. Then we get into the chase phase. And the chase phase, you know, it gets confused with the seeking phase. Again, I'm not a biologist. These two phases overlap, but they're different. There's difference in chase phase. The does, again, more does are entering what we call estrus. And that doesn't happen, you know, like that for all the does. This doe goes into estrus, this one doesn't. Some are ahead, some are behind. But so the bucks are now in the chase phase, and they are frantic. They are looking for these deer. They will run up to a doe, smell her. Nope, you're not in estrus yet. I'm out of here. He'll see and chase every doe it encounters. It sees a female, he's running after it. He wants to identify that deer and see if she is ready for breeding. So again, for the hunter, seeking, chasing, same thing. They're being aggressive. The more aggressive, the more chances I have to harvest that deer. And that is the rut. That's the rut right there for us. Now, if you're a scientist, well, actually, Chad, no, you know, that's not exactly right according to my research, because the tending and breeding phase is actually what a biologist would refer. Yeah, but guess what? They're having sex in private in a really thick area where I'm not, and then they're going to go to bed and lay down to each other. That's the actual rut. Well, I can't kill them while they're doing that. So it's called the tending and breeding phase for me. Tending, really the hunt's over by then. This is the stage, you know, where the doe finally, that buck finds that doe. She is in estrus. She's like, all right, you've been pursuing me for a week now. I'm ready. Good, you broke me down. Now I'm ready. And he, how do you put it nicely, Jack? Accepts the buck's company, we'll say, okay? And they hang out together. And they go someplace private for the most part. You know, just like humans, some, I guess, you know, don't do it so privately. I'm a private guy. I like, you know, let's go to the bedroom. Close, lock the door just in case. You know, so they're locked down. It's a lockdown. There'll be, those two deer are in love for the next minimum 24 hours, probably longer, up to, I don't know, 72 hours. These two deer are going to live together. They're going to lay next to each other. They're going to, am I allowed to say the F word? They're going to fuck a couple of times. Deer could go at it, man, a couple of times. And then, guess what? Just like us, buck's exhausted. He wants to roll over, put on ESPN, and just friggin' not talk. He doesn't want to fight. He doesn't want anything else. Just leave me alone. I want to watch TV. And that's what the buck does. He doesn't have a TV, but he has a nice bush somewhere, and he goes, crawls in it, and just lays there. He's like, yeah, I'm done. I'm all good now. Hard to kill them when they're laying under a bush. Now, I know they got to pee, so they won't pee on themselves. They will get up at some point, take a little walk and pee, and then go back to their bush. They have to eat. They're exhausted, but they realize, I better start eating. So they will search out food sources. And that's the late season hunt. That's where our tactics change. And we get into now looking for these food sources. Where's the water? Where's the food that these bucks and the does are going to be searching? It was sexist of me. I left the does out of it. The does are also going to want to replenish. I'm pregnant now. I'm a doe. I need to get food for the winter. I need to get bulked up for the winter. They're all very exhausted and weak at this point. So this is when our tactics as hunters change. We've identified all the phases. We've been through it. And now we realize the rut. It is, according to the biologist, post-rut. This is when we're looking to get back to our food sources. Hunt the corn. Where's the acorns? Where's the green, leafy trees that are still available to these deer in November. And this is when, you know, we got to really, really start hunting again. You know, the deer is not going to jump into our lap at this point. So, you know, for me, the whitetail rut, it's amazing. It's complex. It's really a magical thing that happens every year for me. A lot of behavioral traits happen during this time. It's all kind of interwoven together. It kind of phased, all these phases come over and work over each other. But, you know, it really is the, you know, it leads to the respect I have for this species of animal, this white-tailed deer that is just so amazing and resilient. And so I hope I shine some light on the rut, the whitetail rut. And I hope, you know, do some research on it. Get out in the woods in November. Put some, even if you're not a hunter, put some orange on and go. Don't mess up any hunters, but go sit in the woods. Take a ride up. Go to a park where there's no hunting. What's that place? Bear Mountain everyone goes to, right? Go to Bear Mountain. There's deer there, and you're not allowed to hunt there. Go take a walk. See this in action. You could see it. I think you'll enjoy yourself. All right. So, unfortunately, that's all the time we'd have. I'd like to thank my man Jack for producing and engineering today's show. You could always find the archived episodes of The Wild Game Domain from the Hunt to the Hearth on heritageradionetwork.org or on iTunes as a podcast. That's all the time we have. So, thank you very much. See you next week. And don't forget, if you kill it, you better eat it. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.